WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, milk, and library books, there is no due date, pasteurization, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning. It's the 26th of February, 2020. My name is Arthur. I had a request. I was going to bring you a box 13, but I had a request. I actually had several requests. One was for a song, but I don't necessarily play all that much music. This is episode 396 of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is the quarter hour episodes, so I'm going to bookend a Fort Laramie here in the middle of the program between two yours truly, Johnny Dollars, starring Bob Bailey. I was going to go with Edmund O'Brien. I was going to play one of those when he actually was Johnny Dollar, but it's kind of hard to bring myself to do that. Good morning. We'll go ahead and start this here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org.
From Hollywood, it's time now for
Johnny Dollar.
This is Hillary Fuchs, CPA. You left word for me to call Mr. Dollar. I don't seem to recall the name.
I'm with Universal Adjusters. They asked me to look into this Wendover claim.
Insurance Adjusters?
That's right, insurance. I understand you filed a claim in Mrs. Wendover's name.
Mrs. Wendover hired me to handle her affairs a few days ago. Who do you want to talk to, me or Mrs. Wendover?
Anybody who can make me understand why Mrs. Wendover let a $50,000 policy lie around for 2 years before she filed a claim.
I'll try. I don't know whether I can convince you or not, but I'll try.
Tonight, and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Universal Adjustment Bureau, 518 Spear Boulevard, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Tears of Night matter. Expense account item one, $92.50, airfare and incidentals, Hartford to Miami Beach, Florida. My plane got in at 11 p.m., so I went to a hotel and got some sleep. I put in a call to Hillary Fuchs, certified public accountant, as soon as I woke up. Then I had some breakfast and took a cab out to his office. It was a pleasant four-mile trip along a beautiful white sanded oceanfront, and it cost me item two, $3 even.
Come on in here, Dollar. The air conditioner's working here.
Hillary Fuchs was a big man in his late 40s. He was semi-bald, had a good sunburn, and smelled faintly of Scotch whiskey. The office he led me into was cool and dark and elegantly furnished in bamboo knickknacks. The desk was cluttered with a stack of financial statements and legal papers.
This is quite a thing, I guess, Dollar. By the way, I didn't find any Universal Insurance Adjusters in the phone book.
We're located in Hartford, Connecticut.
Hartford? You're a long way from home, Dollar. They sent you all the way to Miami Beach about this?
Yep.
Seems like a pretty expensive way to handle it.
Pretty expensive claim, $50,000.
Would it do any good to tell you it's legitimate?
Sure, but I'm hired to check it out just the same.
In other words, you don't believe me.
Well, look at it our way, Mr. Fuchs. The claim came into the office day before yesterday, and we have 72 hours to act on it.
Okay. What can I do?
First off, tell me your connection with Mrs. Wendover.
She hired me to put her business affairs in order about 10 days ago, first time I ever saw her. She said the Treasury Department had advised her to get some expert help. They were on her about back taxes, and that's it.
I see. Tell me about Noah Wendover's death.
He died 2 years ago, last April 14th. By the way, it's just coming to me. Did the insurance company know anything about him being dead until that claim came in?
Nope.
No wonder they sent you all the way from Hartford. Well, Wendover and his wife took a party of eight out on their boat for a 10-day cruise. Wendover had an attack of appendicitis at sea. There wasn't a doctor aboard. The appendix burst and he died before they could make the nearest port.
Mm-hmm. Let me get back to the original question. Why all this time before Mrs. Wendover filed claim for benefits?
Well, you really got to know Mrs. Wendover, I guess. She's a little crazy, a little wacky, a little strange.
These are your impressions of her?
It's a consensus. I asked around after she came here the other day. The story is that she and Wendover had a pretty good thing in their marriage. They were wild about each other. They spent money like water, and they had plenty of it to spend. Then, one day, he died. Kind of threw her. Maybe it's still throwing her. I don't know.
Sure, sure.
Somewhere along the line, in the last year, Mrs. Wendover's met somebody else.
Oh?
I don't know who he is, because I wasn't paying any attention when she mentioned his name. But she's sort of coming out of it, and she's going to marry him.
Uh-huh.
So she wants to get her business affairs in order. From the look of things, nobody's done much about them since Wendover's death. You see all that stuff on the desk?
Yeah, I noticed it.
It's all hers. She brought it to me in three big hat boxes. Stocks, bonds, bills, deeds, I don't know what all. I know she's in a little trouble with the government. Not because she hasn't got the money to pay them, but just because she hasn't bothered with anything like that.
Hmm?
Anyhow, one of the first things I came across was the insurance policy thrown in there with all the rest of the stuff. And look, you see these checks?
Yeah.
Almost $90,000 dividends on some oil stock. Doesn't even bother to open her mail or cash her checks. Well, a lot of people around the country, including your insurance company, are going to be startled when I finish straightening all this out. I sent the policy claim in as a matter of course. That's my explanation for it being 2 years late.
Well, that's a pretty good explanation.
Look here. She completely forgot she loaned an $8,000 automobile to a friend in Tampa 14 months ago. I asked her about it, and she said she thought she'd left it at the filling station.
What?
And here, the boat Wendover died on, worth $60,000. She sold it to a fisherman last year for $5,000.
Yeah, I get the idea, Mr. Fuchs.
Yeah.
So you filed the insurance claim in her name along with a dozen other matters that should have been taken care of 2 years ago.
Yeah. You play golf?
No.
Well, I do, and I'm tired of looking at this pile of stuff.
Mind if I look at it?
Help yourself. All yours. I'll be at the club. Do whatever you have to. By the way, what do you have to do?
Verify this death certificate and the coroner's report.
Well, then you will honor the claim?
I'll file my report, and it's up to the insurance company to do as they see fit.
You're kind of cagey, aren't you?
That's why they pay me. Mr. Fuchs.
Yeah?
Is there some kind of bank balance in this stuff, current?
Oh, you'll find it there, but I'll tell you, in cash, Mrs. Wendover's worth about $950,000. I doubt very much if she's trying to cheat the insurance company out of $50,000.
You can't ever tell, though, can you, Mr. Fuchs?
Nope, can't ever tell.
After he left, I got on the telephone and talked to officials about the coroner's autopsy and the death certification on Noah Wendover. They all seemed to be in order. Then I went through the papers on Fuchs' desk. They seemed to be in enough disorder to verify what he told me about Elise Wendover. I left Fuchs' office about 4:30 and went back to my hotel, carrying a picture of a woman who had existed in a state of limbo for 2 years or more, so far as responsibility and attention to business went. Johnny Dollar.
Hillary, Fuchs, can you come over to my office right away?
I just left there. What's up?
Mrs. Wendover, she's having a fit. Come on over.
Expense account item three. $3 more bucks, more cab fare back to Hillary Fuchs' office. I pulled up in front at exactly 5:30 and noticed a 1956 white Cadillac convertible parked in front. For no reason at all, I took 30 seconds to peek inside. The registration told me the car belonged to Elise Blair Wendover. She had left her purse on the seat and the keys in the ignition. A mink stole was thrown carelessly over the back of the seat. Anybody could have taken the stole, the purse, the car, the whole works. Mrs. Wendover was living up to her advance notices.
Come in, come in.
Fuchs looked pale and shaken. He fumbled around for a cigarette until I handed him one of mine. He lit it up and tried to get a grip on himself.
Mrs. Wendover's in there.
Yeah, what happened?
Well, I had some papers for her to sign, and she dropped in a little while ago.
Uh-huh.
I told her about you. I explained to her it was certainly reasonable the insurance company would want to investigate a claim that had been delayed 25 months.
Well?
She blew up, got kind of hysterical about it, said she wanted to see you right away, that she had something to tell you. Go easy on her, will you?
Well, why do you say that?
Oh, it's just that Well, if I'm wrong about her, I'm glad, but I don't think I'm wrong when I say she's right on the edge. Just on the edge of it. Feeling better, Mrs. Wendover?
The pale girl with the coal black hair, seated stiffly in the chair in front of Hillary Fuchs' desk, was not feeling better. She could have been 16 or 36. It depended on where you were standing when you looked at her. She had a mouth that was too full, shoulders too wide for the strapless sundress, a pair of sandals, a clanking costume bracelet, and black eyes, round, big, bright, too bright.
This is Mr. Dollar, Mrs. Wendover.
I understand you're investigating my husband's death.
I'm here to verify the facts so that Eastern States can act on your claim.
Don't you believe he's dead?
Yes. Don't you?
Oh, yes. I saw him die. Yes, he's dead. How much money do you owe me?
The claim is for $50,000.
Will you pay it?
Well, I presume it will be paid from all I've seen so far. Of course, that part of it's up to the insurance company.
Of course. And they have men sitting at desks reading reports about claims all day long.
Yes.
My dad owned an insurance company once, you know. Those men sitting at their desks. Even my dad sat at a desk. I wonder something. Would one of those men sitting at one of those desks write okay on my claim for Noah's benefits if he knew about me?
Sit down, Mrs. Wendover. Maybe you'd like a drink.
You have one, Mr. Fuchs. Would they?
Well, I have to be indefinite about that, too, Mrs. Wendover. What would put a question in the mind of an adjuster if he knew about you?
I'm indolent. And I'm irresponsible. Mr. Fuchs can tell you that. I'm not quite dependable, am I, Mr. Fuchs?
Oh, we're getting straightened out, Mrs. Wendover.
And then, of course, that wouldn't make a difference. I mean, not really. A great many irresponsible, indolent, undependable people file claims. There's something else. I'm a curse.
Are you?
Oh, yes. It's a very bad thing, a curse. People around me, people I love, just seem to die.
Why do you think you're a curse?
Noah died, and I loved him. And Daddy, I loved him. And my brother Jim, all dead. No one can stay alive around me. I thought I should tell you that.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it, Mrs. Wendover.
Well, then we don't have anything more to discuss. Goodbye, Mr. Dollar, Mr. Fuchs.
Wait a minute.
Johnny, hey, where are you going?
I'm going to drive her home. You are right. She's on the edge of something. I can't quite figure it yet.
Brother was killed in Korea. Her father died of a heart attack 10 years ago.
I got that much from the papers on your desk.
Lord, where'd she ever get the idea?
Oh, I don't know. I've heard of things like this happening. I'll phone you later.
Right.
Wait a minute. I'll drive you home, Mrs. Wendover.
Oh, that'll be nice.
She smiled brightly, still too brightly, and we drove along. She didn't tell me which way to turn, what direction to go, and I didn't ask her. I liked it that way, no one saying a word. I was listening to something else anyhow, something inside of me, loud like a cannon firing twice a second. It was my heart making all the noise. Oh, it's happened a couple of times before, and it meant trouble coming up. I knew it. My heart never makes a mistake.
Mr. Dollar, do you think he'll die too?
Now, here's our star to tell you about tomorrow's intriguing episode of this week's story.
Tomorrow, right out in the broad daylight, I have a look at the Tears of Night. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Thank you, lads. Okay, that was The Tears of the Night Matter. That was Yeah, I forgot to introduce the title of that. The Tears of the Night Matter. It had an original air date of the 21st of May, 1956. It's contemporary because he said she had a 1956 white Cadillac in there. Okay, for the middle part of the show today, I'm going to play Fort Laramie, starring Raymond Burr. Most folks would know him as Perry Mason, if anybody knows what Perry Mason is anyway. This was a series produced by Norman McDonough, same one that brought us Gunsmoke. His edict was historical accuracy, but enough of me yammering. I'll go ahead and play it out. You're listening to Arthur here in the Grand Hour this morning at 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org.
Fort Laramie. Fort Laramie, starring Raymond Burr as Captain Lee Quince. Specially transcribed tales of the dark and tragic ground of the wild frontier. The saga of fighting men who rode the rim of empire. And the dramatic story of Lee Quince, Captain of Cavalry.
He alive, Harrison?
No, Saeed.
Move him back with the others.
In the name of heaven, Captain, how could he be alive? Look at him.
Move him back, Harrison. Lieutenant Syberts is directing the grave detail. Now give him a hand.
We're going to bury them all?
It's the least we can do.
I can't do it, Captain Quince. I can't. I'm all hot and cold in my belly. I just can't look at any more of this.
You get a firm grip on that belly of yours, Harrison. This kind of cleanup's got to be done. Now don't look, don't think, just do your work.
Yes, sir. Yes, I'll do that.
I'm on my fifth, Captain.
All right, Hook.
Two of them was old ladies. I figured they was too old for travel anyway.
See, those graves are cairned.
Lieutenant's seeing to that, Captain. All I gotta do is dig them. Count 12 wagons burning. Them engines don't leave nothing to chance.
No, not much.
They shoot them full of arrows, full of lead, then hack them up. For good measure, they set fire to them.
Better get back to work, Hook.
Yeah. You're a sight safer in the army than in one of them wagon trains, ain't you, Captain?
Sometimes, Hook. Sometimes.
Captain Quinns.
Yeah?
Maybe you ought to speak to the lieutenant.
How's that?
He's fair carried away with all this burying stuff. I declare he'll be laying the dead stock to rest next, so as he can speak words over them.
That all, Hook?
You ought to take a look, Captain. I think it's real touching.
Thinking's not any part of you, Hook, any more than feeling is. I don't want to see that spade of yours stop the next 2 hours.
Yes, sir.
Captain Quinn. Over here.
This one's still alive.
He conscious?
I just come on him. I heard him.
Mister?
Hundreds of Sioux.
Must have raided from the south, Hazen. If it was Sioux.
I gave the major that report. They've been building up to something for months now.
Mister, how many people in your train, mister? We counted 12 wagons.
We had 52. And they took...
Only 50 bodies, Captain. Lieutenant Sybers and I just took count.
You sure, Hazen?
No.
Yes, sir. 49 dead and this one.
No. It took the Beasley girls. It took...
Make that 50 dead, Hazen.
Yeah. You going after him?
With 20 men? No, we'll be another couple of hours here, and it'll still take us 3 more to get back to the fort.
Them girls, that's... Well, dying's easier, Captain.
You telling me something I don't know, Hazen? Yeah, I'll go after him when I stand a chance of getting him. Meantime, you pick up the trail.
Yes, sir. I ought to come on the Sioux camp before night. If I do, I'll make it back to the fort by daylight.
I'm going after him at sunup, whether you're back or not.
Suppose you had the company with you, then what?
We'd have finished our burying a little earlier, Major.
That's all?
That's all.
Captain, I have to make a report to Washington. I'd like to make it look as if the Army meant something out here. So far, I can tell them that a patrol of 20 men arrived in time to bury the members of an entire wagon train.
Would it make your report read any better if you told them a whole company arrived in time to bury them, Major?
I'm not interested in your impertinence, Captain.
I'm not interested in your report, sir.
All right, all right. Look, I know you don't think much of paperwork, Lee. Reports to Washington, all this. But the point is, it all has to be done, whether you like it or not.
My point is, we'd have been just as late with 80 men as we were with 20. You'd still have to report 50 dead and 2 missing.
I don't like to think about those young women.
Somebody better think about them.
You've seen what... Well, you know the savagery they're bound to endure. How soon can you leave, Captain?
At dawn, whether Hazen's back or not.
You sent him on ahead?
He's been scouting the Sioux territory for the last few months. If they've gone back south, we'll find them.
I suppose you'll want the company this time.
I'd want more than one company if I intended to go after him.
There's only one company available, Captain.
Major, I'd like to bargain with them.
Bargain? After a massacre like this?
Yes, sir. If we don't have the men to fight it out with them.
What kind of bargain?
Big Elk. Big Elk for the young women.
I don't know. He wasn't easily captured, Quince.
I know. I brought him in.
He's not doing us much good lying around the stockade. I suppose the Sioux consider him valuable enough to trade for him.
He's a chief.
What if Hazen isn't back by morning? If you expect to find those young women alive, you can't wait much longer.
We may pick Hazen up on the trail, but Big Elk can lead us to the camp.
Yeah, but will he?
To get out of the stockade? Yeah, he'll lead us. You'll understand he's not free till he does.
You better talk to him, Quince. Report back to me tonight.
I'd like to leave at sunup, sir.
If we're satisfied that Big Elk's our best chance, you'll pass the head of your column through the main gates half an hour before reveille tomorrow morning.
Right, sir.
Some fire water, huh?
You men be better off in your bunks.
Try to kill me.
I will. I get the chance.
Something on your mind, Hook?
He's just tormenting him, Captain. Big Elk asked for a drink. Hook here gave him some bilge water.
But it wouldn't have killed him.
Just made him good and sick like he makes me.
You're to leave him alone, Hook.
Hey, let them white women alone, Captain. Not one of them Injuns is leaving them be.
You're all hard, aren't you, Hook? Now get back to your quarters, all of you. We're going after the women before Reveille.
Tattoo ain't sounded yet, Captain.
What did you say, Trooper?
Nothing, sir. Come on.
Here you are. Here, you can drink this, Big Elk.
White man, no friend. Try kill me.
I could have killed you 2 months ago. I brought you here instead. Now go on, drink it. It's from my own canteen.
Good water. Good water. Put out fire and belly.
Your people still hold big camp on Lodgepole Creek?
Big Elk no see people many moon. But brother white man only. White man no brother Big Elk.
The hunting still good along Lodgepole. Good grass, good water. Why would they move camp?
Not know.
If we let you go, Big Elk, you could find your people.
Big Elk, big coup for white man. White man no let Big Elk go.
Well, if you couldn't find your way back, no sense talking to you.
Hey, wait.
Why? You don't know where your people are.
Why you let Big Elk go?
A fair trade. You lead us to the Sioux camp. We'll trade you to your tribe for the white women they have.
No trade.
Your people don't think much of you, do they?
Big Elk hold high honor in tribe. All Sioux proud warrior, hunter, leader, Big Elk.
Then why won't they trade?
White man no trade Big Elk for white woman.
That's just where you're wrong. White men go pretty high on their women folk.
Captain, you play trick?
No trick. You have my word.
No trick. Then Big Elk, give word. We'll lead to Sioux camp.
You still put a lot of store in that captain of yours, Harrison? You still think he knows all there is that's right?
Captain Quince knows what he's about. You see he does.
Kind of gnaws at your innards, though, don't it? Him plain eating out of that Injun's hand.
You're just trying to rile me, Hook, and I ain't giving you the satisfaction.
Look at him, Harrison. The Injun pokes his head to the right, we move to the right. Same with the left. He'd poke his head straight up, your old Captain Quince, he'd have us climb in the air.
You'd best keep your face shut, Hook. I swear you keep me no telling what I'll do.
You'll do like you're told. No more. That captain would tell you to do anything at all. You'd bust yourself doing it. You're gonna grow up licking boots all the way?
I ain't snapping at your bait no more. You can talk all you like, I just ain't listening. I'm just riding along here and I don't even know no dumb trooper named Hook.
Ain't just me talking, bootlicker. It don't set well with a single white man riding in this column being led around by no Injun. You giving any thought to them white women, Harrison? You ever seen one once a bunch of Injuns got through with her?
Well, we're doing a decent thing, ain't we? We're going after them?
No, we ain't. We're just out riding around, Harrison, following an Injun wherever he means to take us. Like as not, he's leading us into an ambush right this minute.
I ain't listening to you again, Hook. Ain't hearing a word you say.
I tell you one thing, bootlicker. That's a dead Injun up there. He don't know it yet. But he's just as dead as he can be.
Call halt!
about an hour from Bear Creek. There's still daylight enough to see us there. We'll bivouac there for the night.
Ryder coming this way, sir.
I know, Syberts. I think it's Hazen. The word on the Sioux camp.
I'm meaning to make a camp here, are you, Captain?
Oh, we're heading to Bear Creek for the night.
That's more like it. Good water there, grass, natural camp. You just a day out of Fort Laramie?
Left the post just at sunup.
Made good time.
Well, Big Elk's picking the trail.
Good job. You're right on the line of the Sioux camp. You leave Bear Creek at sunup, you'll make it to Lodge Pole Creek by mid-morning.
Fair enough.
You got reinforcements coming?
I'm riding in under a white flag. I plan to trade Big Elk for the white women.
Oh, might work. I got in awful close. Don't even think they got scouts out. Leastwise, I didn't see any.
Any sign of the women?
Not likely there would be. No, Captain, the Sioux were looking awful peaceful. For your sakes, I hope they are.
You sent for Major?
Yeah, sit down, Mr. Syberts.
Thank you, sir.
What's the talk among the men?
You know the men, Captain, just camp talk.
Just camp talk?
That's all, sir.
Well, that's good. I had an idea maybe Phelan was running a little high against Big Elk.
Well, it is. You know, men feeling the way they do about the Sioux capturing the white women, they're taking on with him a little.
What do you mean?
Well, Josh and him making threats, little things. Well, for example, he's half starving, I guess, and thirsty, of course.
So?
Well, they keep putting food and water just out of his reach.
And you stood there and let it happen, Mr. Syberts?
Well, sir...
Just camp talk, Mr. Syberts.
It's more my fault, Captain. You can't blame the men.
I can blame the men, and I can blame you. I gave my word.
Look out! He broke free! Pick it! Let it loose!
Hold your fire! Don't shoot any of you! Hold your fire!
Watch it, Captain. He's coming your way.
He's free. Won't take long.
All right.
I go. White man, they try to kill me.
Now, nobody's going to kill you. Now, listen to me. I won't let anyone harm you.
Your word no mean much. White man, no honor.
What do you know about honor?
Quiet! Quiet, all of you! Quiet! Now, listen to me. And understand me. I don't know what's behind all this, but for your sakes, I'm going to put it down to your feeling for the captured white women. All right, quiet! We'll add to that for now. But I'm not forgetting what happened here. Now use your heads. Big Elk's our best chance to get those women out of the Sioux camp safely. Maybe our only chance. I gave him my word there'd be no tricks. The stockade's waiting for the next man who abuses him. Any questions? Harrison?
Yes, sir?
See that there's water and warm food for Big Elk.
Right away, sir.
Now, any of you get any ideas, I'll be waiting for you. That's all. Dismissed. All right, Big Elk.
Captain Quince. I'm sorry, sir. I should have stopped all that.
Any man could have stopped it, Mr. Syberts.
But being an officer and all, I should have.
The Army saw fit to make you an officer, Mr. Syberts. Being a man is entirely up to you.
I just didn't...
That's all, Mr. Syberts.
Camp of my people in valley below. Big Elk, keep word.
Big Elk, if I had a home like that, I'd never leave it.
Red men first here. Then white men come. With gun.
Yeah, I know. I'll take the flag, Mr. Syberts. You have your orders?
Yes, sir.
We'll ride in under your cover. There's to be no firing unless there's trouble. If I drop the white flag, that'll be your signal to open fire. Any questions?
No, sir.
Then pass the word. Big Elk and I are riding in.
Good luck, Captain.
You lead, Big Elk. No sign of your scouts yet.
My people expect no trouble.
There'll be no trouble.
Big Elk turned back on white men. Not safe. No trust.
I've kept my word, Big Elk. The rest is up to your chiefs.
Big Elk knows fear.
Oh, you're safe with me.
Big Elk, no trust. His strength.
You crazy fool, stop it! Stop! Stupid murdering swine.
It was Hook shot him, sir, before anyone could stop him.
He'll rot in the stockade for this.
Stand a horse! Stand a horse!
Lieutenant Syberts, move the company back immediately.
I know how you feel, Captain. But it's done. The man will be dealt with, fully.
Major, it was the coldest kind of murder.
You're lucky you got out of there alive. Especially you. Right now, I'm thinking about those white women.
I don't think there's a chance they're alive now. The Sioux will take this out on somebody. And they're handiest.
We can't think about that. We're going after those women this time with every man in our command.
With at least 1,000 Sioux at Lodgepole Creek?
We'll do our best, Captain.
Gorse had been with me, I'd have seen this since.
Sergeant Gorse was accompanying the first wagon train through.
I know that. It's my own stupidity.
Stupidity? Surely you're not blaming yourself.
For taking Hook on that patrol, you bet I am. I'm long enough in the Army to spot a troublemaker.
You're not thinking straight, Lee. I count on your judgment because it's cool and straight. You're no good to me in this turn of mine.
Major, my guts are crawling now. What do you want?
I want an officer with head enough to command Company B to engage the Sioux.
All right, sir. You got one. I'm all right.
Captain Matheson moved into the post yesterday with C Company. With Meade's infantry and howitzers, we should give you the cover you need.
I'm not used to this much support, Major. Might get lost in that crowd.
Your job is to get those women and get out. After your initial charge, the main fighting's up to C Company and the infantry.
Yes, sir. Get the women, bring them here.
And you'll stand by as reinforcements for Matheson and Meade.
Right.
Yes?
Major?
Come in.
Captain?
Hazen?
We're gonna need your help, Hazen.
Well, there's a chance you can surprise them. They're on the move.
Which way?
North and to the west. Where's your map?
Right here.
Yeah. This was their main camp at Lodgepole.
Uh-huh.
Now, they moved along the valley where you were, Captain. Along the stream and then up to Horse Creek there. Then branched up to Bear Creek near Iron Mountain, right there.
We bivouacked there.
You were a little to the east, but no matter. They moved across to Chugwater along here, see? And followed along the Laramie Range there.
A whole Lodgepole camp on the move?
All of them. But this is where I think you can get them. If it's still the Beasley girls you're after.
They're our first objective.
All right. The warriors, the main force of the tribe, they're well up front, moving ahead. They're not expecting any trouble from the rear. And so that's where they got their squaws and old folks and young'uns.
Yeah, likely the Beasley women are back there with them.
It's a near cinch.
Where are they now, in your judgment?
The natural camp spot's about there on the Laramie River. Moving slow like they got to along that range, they should make camp there tonight. If it was me, I wouldn't wait for sunup to move in.
He's right, Major.
Can you have B Company ready to move out by dusk?
I can.
Pass the word, Captain. Report back in half an hour. Matthewson and Meade will be here. We'll lay out a full plan.
Right, sir. Mr. Syberts?
Right here, Captain.
Men filed out in position?
Yes, sir. As ordered.
Harrison, move up.
Yes, sir.
Harrison, you'll flank me on the charge. We're going to bring those women out, you understand?
I sure do, sir.
Good.
Proud to.
Company!
Company!
At the truck! Hold!
We stampeded their horses. They gotta take cover.
Meade's infantry. We're covered, sir.
Yeah, Mr. Syberts. Keep at them. Harrison, over here. This way. The lodges, over here.
There's a squaw, Captain.
I'll get her. The white women, where are they?
No white woman. No kill squaw.
Now, where are they?
Lodge. There. All safe. No kill.
This way, Harrison.
Well, sir.
Harrison!
Captain Quince. It's them women. Them Beasley girls. Why, they can't be over 5-6 years old. Either one of them.
I know. Come on, Harrison. Let's get these women out of here.
Fort Laramie is produced and directed by Norman McDonald and stars Raymond Burr as Lee Quince, Captain of Cavalry. The script was specially written for Fort Laramie by Kathleen Height, with sound patterns by Bill James and Ray Kemper. Musical supervision by Amerigo Marino. Featured in the cast were Jack Moyles, Harry Bartell, Sam Edwards, Lawrence Dobkin, Lou Krugman, James Nusser, and Lillian Baeff.
Company, attention! Dismiss!
Yes, that was Fort Laramie, Episode 9. The Beasley Girls. The original air date of the 18th of March, 1956. Fort Laramie, I believe it was a sustained show, and that only lasted one season before Raymond Burr took the lead role and Perry Mason. Because I'm kind of strapped for time here, I'm going to go ahead and fulfill an FCC obligation. Don't drink and drive. If you're under the influence of anything, never even think about getting behind the wheel of a car and driving. people die that way. A public service message from WMFO and Medford Tufts Educational Radio. Okay. If it sounds like I'm on street side here, it's because the window was left open, but I don't know, it's kind of nice and comfortable here in the studios. Next up, I'm going to continue with yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey. This is the Tears of the Night matter. I neglected to introduce that to start off the show this morning. This one had an original air date of the 22nd of May, 1956. This Elvis was yet to be a household name at this point. And yours truly, Johnny Dollar, started experimenting with quarter-hour dailies. So, hope you enjoy. You're listening to Arthur here on the Grand Hour on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Hillary Fuchs, Dollar. How's Mrs. Wendover?
So far, so good.
Dollar, can you talk?
Yeah, sure. She's in the other room.
Do you think she's all right? Mentally, I mean?
I think she's all right enough to get by. I think she's scared to death of something or somebody.
That business of the curse?
Yeah.
You know there isn't anything to that.
There's something to it for her. She thinks she's somehow responsible for her husband's death, for her father's death, and for her brother's death. On the way here, she mentioned, just like that, that someone else was going to die. Or words to that effect.
Who?
I don't know.
Tonight, and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Universal Adjustment Bureau, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Tears of Night matter. It had started as a routine investigation. A claim filed for $50,000 on the death of Noah Wendover, Miami Beach, Florida. The question, why the 2-year delay in making claim? The answer turned out to be interesting. Briefly, it involved a distraught woman who had neglected not only the insurance, but everything else in her life for 2 years. A woman obsessed with the idea she was a curse.
Do you like soda or water?
Soda, please. Thanks. Cheers.
Good luck. What's your name again?
Johnny Dollar.
Oh, yes, that's right. Mr. Fuchs introduced us, didn't he? Do you think he'll be able to straighten out all my business affairs for me?
Yes, I think so, Mrs. Wendover.
Including the insurance?
Including the insurance, yes.
Well, you're worried about the claim, aren't you?
Well, I'm paid to worry about it. I'm not so worried now as when I first came to Miami Beach. I think I understand why it took all this time for the claim to be filed.
You mean you've met me and you think I'm kind of... You know, not all there or something.
Well...
I suppose Mr. Fuchs explained how badly I've managed things for the last 2 years.
He showed me how you've let your affairs go to the devil, if that's what you mean. I'm glad you finally turned it all over to him. I think he'll take care of it for you.
I behaved rather badly in Mr. Fuchs' office, didn't I?
Well, I wouldn't say that.
Poor Mr. Fuchs. He was frightened, I think. I don't know what it is, really. I mean... He mentioned that you were in town investigating my claim on Noah's death. I felt I should talk to you. That's why I had him call you. I wanted to tell you about the curse.
There's no such thing, you know, Mrs. Wendover.
I know. I couldn't have been responsible for Dad's death. It was a heart attack many years ago. I was away at school in New York, and Jim, my brother being killed in Korea, I couldn't have had anything to do with that. And Noah... Oh, I loved him very much. I'm not cursed, am I?
No, you certainly aren't. All of these deaths around you have been tragic, doubly so because you seem to have been very fond of the people. But you aren't responsible in any way.
I like you. You're very nice. If you have any questions you want to ask me about Noah, I'd be glad to answer them. I really would. I'm all right now. Really, I am.
Well, when we left Mr. Fuchs' office, you talked a lot about that curse business.
Yes, I'm ashamed.
Were you still thinking of that when you spoke to me in the car?
Did I speak to you in the car?
Yes.
You know, I can't remember riding in the car at all. I've been standing here talking to you, and I've been wondering all this time how we got here.
Do you mind if I help myself?
No.
We drove over together from Hillary Fuchs' office. I drove you here.
Oh. Some things I just blank out. I've talked to a psychiatrist, you know. I mean, I've been under treatment for several months. He says I established a strong pattern when Noah died of shutting things out, of just forcing my mind to become blank. He's trying to help me get over it. What did I say in the car?
You said you were cursed and you wondered if he would die.
Oh, dear.
Who's he?
Teddy.
Teddy,
Teddy Davis. I'm going to marry him when he asks me. And I know he will. I love him very much.
Well, why do you think Teddy might die?
Because of people dying around me that I love.
He doesn't believe in the curse, does he?
Oh, no. He's something like you, in a way. Nice. He makes me laugh at it. He says it's ridiculous.
Because it is.
Somehow I feel comforted.
Now, look. You marry this fellow the minute he asks you and forget about being cursed and everything else. He'll take care of you. Well, I better go now.
Mr. Dollar.
Yes?
Thank you. I need sometimes very much to talk to someone like you. Thank you.
Jay Dollar, Oracle. Go out and marry so-and-so and live happily ever after. I like the little kiss she gave me. I like the way she squeezed my hand. I like the perfume she was wearing. I like the way the intense, hard brightness had gone out of her black eyes and she was just a nice woman being a woman. I liked all that. What I didn't like was the idea that she could be the other way, believing in the curse and believing she was somehow responsible for people dying. When I left her, I knew that part wasn't ended. I knew it would come back.
Come on in, Dollar. I sort of stuck around wondering if you'd come back here. How is she?
She's okay now. Fuchs, I'm sending in my report on this policy tonight. I'm recommending they honor it. I've got enough verification.
Okay, that's fine. Sure appreciate your help on this, Dollar. Let me buy you dinner.
No, no, thanks. I'm getting the first plane back to Hartford.
Why not wait until tomorrow? You've got a reason, haven't you?
Yeah, I guess so.
Mrs. Wendover?
Oh, I've met people like her before. Don't ask me where or when, but I've seen them. And there isn't anything to a curse, but trouble seems to follow them. Big trouble. My business here is practically finished. I just want to get out and get away. Can I use your office for about an hour?
Sure. It's all yours. Dollar, I feel the same way.
I spent a half an hour typing up my report on the Wendover claim and another 10 minutes on the phone asking for an airplane back to Hartford. They said they'd call me right back, and I poured myself some of Fuchs whiskey and sat down to stare out at the night. Lights burned up and down the white beach. People strolled up and down, looking at the water, holding hands. And I was sitting alone in Hillary Fuchs' office, waiting for a phone call and thinking about a curse.
Hi.
Hi. Who are you?
Anybody else here?
No, why?
You work kind of late.
So do you. What's on your mind?
You? Costigan wants to see you right away. I'm supposed to take you over.
Whoever Costigan is, tell him he doesn't want me.
You don't tell Sam things like that.
You know, it's been a long time since I shook in my boots when a skinny hood like you stood around acting tough. If you've got some business with Hillary Fuchs, look him up at his home.
This is Fuchs' office. You're behind his desk. You'll do. Now, come on, mister, and don't show me how loud a certified public accountant can growl. I just might swing this thing on your head. That's better. You got a hat?
No.
I know Costigan wants to talk to you, but I'd sure like to belt you on just for the practice.
I'm not Hillary Fuchs.
Come on, let's go.
Hey, you're gonna break my arm! I'd like to, just for the practice. Now then, it's Costigan. Is he the one from Chicago?
Sam's been there.
Answer. The Sam Costigan kicked out of Chicago a few years ago?
Yeah.
What does he want to see Fuchs about?
The Wendover dame.
What?
Something about the Wendover dame. I don't know what it is. He just wants to see you.
Okay, what's your name?
Frank Scanlon.
Here. You put this thing in your pocket. Pull it out again in front of me, and I'll brain you. Now, let's go.
Huh?
Now I want to see Sam.
Well, sure. Anything you say.
I followed Frank Scanlon out of the building to a waiting car, a black packet with side curtains. It was a nice touch for this day and age, but it didn't make much sense. None of it did. It was illogical in the beginning, middle, and end. Most of all, I didn't make much sense. I should have been in my room packing. Instead, I was on my way to see an old-time grifter and hoodlum named Sam Costigan, because someone had mentioned the name Wendover.
You want a smoke?
I use my own.
Suit yourself, fella.
Scanlon was a thin one with sharp, narrowed eyes, too much padding in the shoulders, too much snap to the brim of his hat, too much point to the toe of his shoes. The .38 I'd taken away from him and handed back made a considerable bulge in the front of his coat. About 6 miles out of Miami Beach, he turned off the main highway onto a dirt road. About a mile of that, and up ahead, we saw lights. The lights became a fine old colonial mansion, every room aglow. Two or three guards were watching the entrance to the front. They all needed shaves. No one said anything.
Yeah? It's me, Philly. This here is Hillary Fuchs. Sam wants to see him.
Morning.
How are you feeling, Mr. Feely?
What kinds of punks are on nowadays?
I wouldn't get frisky with him if I was you. He's a pretty touchy fella.
It's so.
Yeah. This way, come on.
He led me into the main foyer, where a hat-check girl with a lot of red hair stood ready for the evening's business, which hadn't begun yet. On the right, what had been the dining room of the old house was now a circular bar that could seat 25 or 30. To the left in what had been the parlor and library, I counted two crap tables, two roulette tables, and two blackjack stands. Beyond all this, on a screen porch, a five-piece combo made music. A few tables and head waiters stood around looking bored. Scanlon led me upstairs, and we stopped in front of a wide white door marked private. I thought he was going to knock. Instead, he whirled around very quickly and stuck the same old .38 about 2 inches into my ribs.
Now let's stand steady.
Feely! Eddie!
You giving you trouble, Frankie?
Nah.
I will, Buster. I'll give you plenty of trouble if you want it.
Hear how he talks to me?
I'll crack him up a little for you if you like, Frankie.
Nah. He got business with Sam right now. We'll take care of our business with him later on.
However you say it, Frankie.
I just wanted you to remember that.
I will. The same way I remember a dirty newspaper story.
Know something? I'm looking forward to you.
Now, here's our star to tell you about tomorrow's intriguing episode of this week's story.
Tomorrow, there is a curse that goes with the Wendover name. Goes wherever it is. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
That was yours truly, Johnny Dollar. The second episode of The Tears of the Night Matter. I will not play the rest tomorrow because you will have to tune in next week from 5 to 6 a.m. here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org for the Grand Hour. The Tears of the Night Matter had an original air date of the 22nd of May, 1956. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the rest of the day.